ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, the Samambonam, chapter 71, the Lord travels to Indraprastha, text number 3. Yastavyam Rajasuyena Dikchakra Jainatabu Atojara Sutajaya Upayartho mato mama. Yastavyam rajasuyena Chakra jaina vabho Eto jara sutta jaya Yastavyam yajasurena Vichakra jaina babo Eto jara sutta jaya Prabhidato mamotana. Yastavyam, sacrifice should be performed. Rajasuyena, with the Rajasuya ritual. Dik of directions. Chakra, the complete circle. Jayena, for one who is conquered. Vibho, O Almighty One. Ataha,
therefore,
Jarasuta, of the son of Jara, Jayaha, the conquest, Ubaya, birth, Artha, having the purposes, Mataha, opinion, Mama, my. Translation of Prabhupada by the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Buddha Guru speaking. Only one who has conquered all opponents in every direction can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, O Almighty One. Thus, in my opinion, conquering Jarasandha will serve both purposes. Prabhupada. Sri Uddhava here explains that only one who has conquered all directions is entitled to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Therefore, Lord Krishna should immediately accept the invitation to participate in the sacrifice. But then he should arrange to kill Jarasandha as a necessary prerequisite. In this way, the king's request for protection would be fulfilled automatically. If the Lord would thus adhere to a single policy, namely, seeing that the Rajasuya sacrifice was performed properly, all purposes would be fulfilled. According to Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one of Lord Krishna's qualities is chatura, clever, which means that he can perform various types of work at the same time. Thus, the Lord could certainly have solved the dilemma of how to simultaneously satisfy King Yudhisthira's desire to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice and the imprisoned king's desire for freedom. But Krishna wanted to give his dear devotee Uddhava the credit for the solution. Thus he pretended to be perplexed. Om Jnana Tamanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So today, of course, is the first day of the Prabhupada's book marathon. So, we have short classes starting 7:30 for the next 5 days, and then the program gets adjusted at the end of Karatak slightly. The aim is to be all completed by 8:15, so those Sankirtan soldiers can get out and do battle with Maya and fire out millions of books in a fully automatic style. So, anyway, we'll discuss this verse from Bhagavatam today. So, of course, the situation is that having observed, Narada Muni was observing Lord Krishna's daily activities, and eventually, during the course of that chapter, Krishna entered the assembly house. And then on one particular day, it's describing generally Krishna's day, and then once upon a time, a certain event happened. And what was that event? That a messenger entered the assembly and submitted a plea from kings, many, many kings who had been captured and imprisoned by Jarasandha, a very mighty warrior king. And they were saying that you are the Supreme Lord, only you can deliver us. So we surrender unto you for that purpose. And just as the messenger had finished delivering his plea, the great sage Devarshi Narada arrived. And Lord Krishna immediately worshipped him. As soon as Narada Muni entered the assembly, Krishna worshipped him and inquired, Narada Muni, you travel all over the three worlds and also in the spiritual world, so therefore no news is unknown to you. So please, therefore, tell me what my dear friends, the Pandavas, are doing and what King Yudhisthira wants to do. So this is the nature of the Lord. He is very concerned about his devotees. As much as we remember Krishna, Krishna will remember us. So King Yudhisthira was always thinking of Krishna, and therefore the Lord would always think of him as well. This is one of the qualities of the Lord, that he is friendly. And it's a very endearing quality. Everybody wants a friend, and Krishna is the supreme friend. It's just, we've forgotten that. Therefore we see friends and relationships in the material world, which are not as satisfying. They're not satisfying. Ultimately, everybody's vision in this material world is self-interested. So any relationship is generally some kind of business deal. Even though it might be dressed up in all sorts of nice sentiments, self-interested conditioned soul is trying to get something for himself. Krishna is not like that. The spiritual world, the principle of interaction is service. And loving service, actually. So this is Krishna's mood of relationship with his devotees, thinking with concern how they're doing. And Narada Muni, after offering prayers to Lord Krishna, saying, actually, you know everything, but anyway, I'll tell you that King Yudhisthira wants to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Why would he want to do that? The Rajasuya sacrifice is a massive Vedic sacrifice performed by kings. And it greatly increases the prestige of the dynasty. That's why somebody why a king would ordinarily perform it, to bring prosperity and also prestige to his dynasty. But that is not King Yudhisthira's idea. King Yudhisthira's idea is that I'll perform this massive ceremony, and so many, all the great personalities of the world will come, and even the demigods. And then, in that assembly, we can select Lord Krishna as head of the assembly. This was his intention. So, initially Lord Krishna's counselors had all been contemplating what to do about King Jarasandha. And then another element came into the whole picture. Oh, now King Yudhisthira wants us, actually Narada Muni, great sage, is requesting us to go to Indraprastha for the Rajasuri sacrifice. But and Prabhupada says they were not very much keen to do that because they were, their minds were currently on how to destroy Jarasandha. So Lord Krishna, with his beautiful smiling face, he turns to his dear cousin and advisor, Uddhava, and says, Uddhava, you're great-minded. Great-minded, what's that? Here we have Mahamati, great-minded Uddhava. So King Yudhisthira, Krishna asked, Krishna asked, Uddhava, what do you think we should do? Your mind is very clear. You have great insight into the situations. Therefore, you know what to do. Gradually, as we become liberated from the modes of material nature, specifically also attachment, we develop knowledge, jnana, and vairagya, detachment. That is the prerequisite for clear intelligence, actually. Because when one is attached and ignorant, then one is foolish, very foolish. One performs so many foolish activities. So, Uddhava was great-minded, very enlightened. And he could see the situation clearly. And we also need advisors in our life. We'll come back to that point. So Krishna asked them, what do you think we should do? And of course, Uddhava would later, when approached by Vidura for transcendental knowledge, after Lord Krishna had departed, Uddhava would go into trance of remembering Krishna, and then emerge from the trance with tears in his eyes and say, the Lord is so inconceivable. He is the Supreme Lord, yet he embodies so many contradictory qualities. Although he was the Supreme Lord, he asked me for advice. It's the same. This is the beautiful characteristic of the leader of the Lord, is that he acts. He acts as if he's dependent upon his devotees. Just like the Brahmana, the illiterate Brahmana who Lord Chaitanya came across, who was reading Bhagavad Gita, but being ridiculed by all these surrounding Brahmanas. Yet he had tears in his eyes. So the Lord said, what is your experience? Why are all these other Brahmanas laughing at you? The Brahmana said, my dear sir, actually the fact is I'm illiterate. I cannot read. I simply turn the pages. Why? Because my spiritual master told me to. He told me, you read Bhagavad Gita every day. So I simply just turn the pages. And sometimes, especially in the beginning, when we get Prabhupada's books, it's like that, you know. There's so many foreign concepts, so many Sanskrit words. It's a whole world that we're unfamiliar with. So we just turn the pages. I mean, it's probably a bit different from for people from India. From the Western world, we have no concept of 90% of the ideas and cultural elements presented in Bhagavatam and even some of the more basic books. But yet, because the devotees tell us to, because our faith and our relationships with the devotees, we try. And when our spiritual master also says you must read, we read and we turn the pages and we try and understand. But we may not understand. But actually, understanding Bhagavad Gita, understanding Krishna conscious knowledge, actually, actually requires mercy. Reading is not a knowledge-gathering activity that you, like a scholar that reads a book and just gets out the facts and speculates. Reading in Krishna consciousness is a devotional activity, meaning we do it as service. We do it as service with a devotional spirit. I am serving Krishna. I am humbly trying to associate with the personalities within these books. And with that mood, revelation comes, actually. Things jump out at us and strike our heart, actually, very deeply. So this Brahmana, he was just turning the pages. He couldn't even read. It was just all like a bunch of, you know, what's that font on the computer, Wingdings. It was all like written in Wingdings, you know. Just all this squiggles and squirrels. Yet, he was crying. Lord Chaitanya said, what is your experience? Well, he said, every page I turn, I simply see this beautiful picture of Partha Sarathi. I see Lord Krishna driving Arjuna's chariot. I see Lord Krishna serving his devotee. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Yet he is serving his devotee. So this beautiful scene brings tears to my eyes. I become stunned with the wonderful qualities of the Lord. So, in the same way, Uddhava became stunned when he thought, Lord Krishna is asking me for advice. He treated me as his advisor, although he was the Supreme Lord. Uddhava was very aware of Krishna's position. He's very intelligent as well. Huh? Krishna sent Uddhava to consult gopis, actually. And Uddhava was completely blown away by their devotion. He after speaking to the residents of Vrindavan, he just wandered around the place for a few months, just in complete ecstasy, glorifying the place, glorifying the residents. This place is not of this world. This place is completely Krishna conscious, 100%. And you can understand, you know, that these were very exalted devotees. So, Uddhava was not in ignorance about Krishna's position. So, imagine how striking that is. Somebody knows everything, yet your spiritual master asks your opinion on something, asks your advice for something. Imagine you have such awe and reverence for your spiritual master, then what is your opinion? It is striking, touching. So, this was Uddhava's. So, Uddhava, yes, I am a servant of the Lord, and he wants to play like this. This is his leela. Let me offer some advice. So, he analyzed the situation and actually said, there is no real difference in these two activities, because in order for King Yudhisthira to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, he has to have conquered all directions. He has to have the submission of all the kings in the land. And that can be obtained, and it was obtained, because, you know, after the Pandavas returned from exile, this is their first exile, when Duryodhan tried to burn them in the house of Lak, but they escaped. And then they returned and won Draupadi at the ceremony for her marriage. You know, the contest where you had to shoot an arrow through the spinning wheel and pierce the eye of a false fish. Well, and the only way you could judge where to shoot was to look in the reflection of a rippling pool of water. And nobody could do that except Arjuna. So he came in the guise of the Brahmana. They all came and said, let's see the fun. And then Arjuna stepped up after all the other kings failed, including Duryodhana. Arjuna performed the task upon Draupadi. And that's kind of the beginning when they became reintegrated. The Kurus were kind of, by force of the social pressure, forced to say, oh, well, it's so wonderful that you're still alive. We thought you'd all died in that terrible accident. Of course, it was all their design. But anyway, because it would have looked very bad politically to just say, ah, you're back. How terrible. And attack them. So no, anyway, the Pandavas got some land. They were given, actually, a desert land. But Lord Krishna helped them and made Indra pour so much profuse rain upon that land that it became lush and prosperous. And because everyone, all the citizens of the land, were so attracted to Yudhisthira's righteous character and qualities, and they wanted to be under his leadership, so many people flocked, and Indraprastha was born and became very prosperous, extremely prosperous. And this made Duryodhan and his 99 brothers burn with envy. Anyway, King Yudhisthira, at the height of his prosperity, he wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice in order to honor Lord Krishna. And they had to conquer all directions. And he would do that very easily just by sending out the brothers, his four brothers, in four different directions. And they would go out and they conquered. Most of the kings surrendered willingly. Some of them wanted to fight and they were destroyed. And then massive trains of booty started to flood into Indraprastha from the four directions as the four brothers returned. But one person they couldn't conquer was Jarasandha. Jarasandha had the strength of 10,000 elephants. He was obstinate, like anything. So, Uddhava knew that King Yudhisthira wouldn't be able to perform the sacrifice without destroying Jarasandha. Jarasandha wasn't going to agree to, you know, or submit to the leadership of Yudhisthira Maharaj. Therefore, there had to be a fight. Because in order to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, one has to have conquered all directions or gained sovereignty of all directions, either by the willing surrender of the surrounding kingdoms or through fighting. So Jarasandha had to be killed, one way or another. He had to be killed to release the kings, and he had to be killed also to make the sacrifice possible. Uddhava said, actually, there's only one thing. What you should do is go to Indraprastha to support King Yudhisthira and his preparations for the sacrifice, and then you should take Bhimasen, because only one person can fight with Jarasandha. That's Bhimasen, because Bhimasen also has the strength of 10,000 elephants. So if they fight by themselves, then there might be a possibility of Jarasandha being overcome. And especially if you go there, if you accompany Bhimasen in the fight, by your presence, surely Bhima will be able to overcome Jarasandha. That's what you should do. And the way you should do it, actually, is you should dress up as brahmanas. You, Arjuna, and Bhima, you should go there. Beg a fight. You should pretend you're brahmanas, because he's a proud king, so he prides himself upon, you know, being very charitably disposed to the brahmanas. So if you beg a fight as brahmanas, he'll be obliged to, you know, he says, yeah, I'll give you anything you want. He said, okay, actually, you want to fight. And then Jarasandha realized, well, he kind of suspected when these massive, you know, muscular brahmanas, so-called brahmanas, turned up at his doorstep with marks of the bowstring up their arms. He suspected that something was going on. And when Krishna made that proposal, he laughed very loudly. He said, surely I'll give you the fight you want, but you're a coward, Krishna, because you ran away. You know, in the 18th fight, even though you defeated me 17 times, but in the 18th fight you ran away, so you're a coward, I'm not going to fight with you. And Arjuna's a weakling compared to me. So only Bhimasen, I'll only fight with Bhimasen, he's the only one worthy. So this was Uddhava's proposal. This is what he said you should do. And of course Krishna acquiesced, said yes, this is a great idea, and proceeded to execute. So the main practical teaching for our practice of Krishna consciousness, one very practical teaching we can extract from this, is the principle of taking guidance. There is a nice ashram in Wellington, New Zealand, men's ashram led by Mahabhanthapu, and he has a mission statement. It's a very elaborate document. It's quite famous actually, because it's like a whole, you know, 18,000 verse. Maybe not 18,000, it's a bulky thing, and he goes through it whenever some new devotee comes. You know, they do a series. He does a series of morning classes on the whole thing because it kind of gets their focus. What are we doing here? What is this ashram lifestyle all about? What are we trying to achieve? And he outlines, you know, the basic. You know, you've all heard preaching is the essence. The books are the basis. Purity is the force. Preaching is the essence, and utility is the principle. And then he adds one more. He says, guidance is the secret. At every moment we are getting our information and making decisions. We're making decisions based on what we think we should do. And why do we think we should do a certain thing? Because of the information we have. So we are all dependent. And we're always taking something as authority. We all have, and that could be, for a lot of people, that's what is the authority? My own sense perception. Because I perceive it in a certain, because I perceive a situation in a certain way, that is real, that's what I take as authority, therefore I'm going to act. Or because I feel in a certain way. Because my emotions tell me a certain thing. Because my desires say. So this is one type of authority we can have. We can also have the authority or guidance of our friends. They think we should take a certain course of action, so we do it. Or we can have guidance of teachers or superiors. Now, of course, as devotees practicing devotional service, guidance is an important feature because we're trying to elevate our consciousness. Generally, what we will do is act according to our conditioning. And what does that mean? It's samsara. We just go round and round in a circle. You might notice that if you see your old friends, you've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a while, you've been a little bit removed perhaps from your circle of friends and your conditioned life, and you step away from them for a while, say a couple of years or something, and then you go and see them again. And you probably find that they're pretty much doing the same things that they were doing when you left, you know. Except they're a little more sort of cynical and everything's a lot more hackneyed, you know, like worn out. But they're just going the same, they're still struggling with the same issues. They still have the same relational problems. You know, they're just going around in circles, you know, they're just going around the garden path. But if you stay in the association of devotees, it's very dynamic because all the devotees are making advancement, and you see that. If you say you stay in some yatra and then you go somewhere else, and then you meet devotees that you knew some time ago, a year ago or something, you meet them again and you see they've changed so much, they've elevated their consciousness so much. It's striking actually, you can see how they've grown, just like small children. If you go away for a while and you come back and then they've grown. So devotees, they grow, they change, they develop. And this is because their Krishna consciousness is a self-development, it's a spiritual self-development lifestyle. But even in Krishna consciousness, if we're, it's easy to just take the easy road and just act according to your conditioning. And that's what can happen. It does happen to devotees. You just you end up going through this, you're struggling with the same anartha or the same tendency for so long, same habit for so long, and often just by your own efforts you can't give it up. But then you take guidance and you get somebody's higher intelligence, you get the perspective of somebody with higher intelligence who can paint a picture of the whole situation for you and give you some advice and hold you accountable, if you like, to change and elevate. Then it makes it possible to change and develop. This is the principle of guidance, so important. Because often we can't tell if we're going off the rails, going off track as well. So guidance is so important. Even Lord Krishna, to set the example, he takes guidance. Krishna accepts a spiritual master. It's a necessary element of spiritual life. Guru, sadhu, and shastra. We have to have all three working in our life. And who we select as our guide, even amongst our peers, you know, the guru, that's one thing, but also in our day-to-day practice, in our day-to-day life, you know, we bounce our thoughts and ideas and plans off our friends and so forth, and we get a certain reflection back. So who you select, who you take seriously, whose opinions you take seriously, is that's a function of intelligence, where we place our faith. So if we want to advance nicely, we have to select those persons who are going to give us an honest picture. We shouldn't surround ourselves with yes men or yes women. No? That every time we have an idea, they go, yes, yes, great idea, bravo, bravo, I agree. No, we should find people who are going to give us an honest reflection. Actually, that's not such a good idea. You know, it says in Bhagavad Gita that that's maya. So I don't think you should do that. That can be uncomfortable sometimes because we just want to act according to how we want to act, but the higher principle is to mold our activities and lifestyle in a Krishna conscious way, so we advance. Alright, I think we'll stop there. Is there any questions or comments on these points? Yes.
As for this incident that you narrated, that Krishna and the Brahmanas, and then later on they believe that they had three Kshatriyas, or just as a new that the Kshatriyas can be considered. So it appears as though when you know the enemy, even in place where they know this, people are committing certain demonic activities, is it okay for people to sort of not really cheat, but
to not really reveal the truth, but the aim should be to defeat that demon? Is that the way to interpret, or is that because it's only for Krishna? Should you always be chivalrous? Do that. Do the noble, honorable thing. Krishna's famous for being a little bit underhand in his tactics, actually. He even tried to get King Yudhisthira, because Dronacharya on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he's mowing down the Pandava soldiers like anything. They couldn't defeat him, and they became very concerned. He's gonna burn our entire army. What to do? And Krishna said, "What you do is you, King Yudhisthira, what you should do, because he won't believe me." But you go out on the battlefield and you just yell out, Ashwatthama's died! Ashwatthama's died! And he'll think that his son has been slain. And then he'll give up his determination to fight. He'll become morose, and then you can kill him. And King Yudhisthira said, I can't do that. He said, I can't do that. This is actually... Yeah. Anyway. He said, I can't do that. I'm, you know, it's just, I just can't do it because I'm attached to being honest. So Krishna said, okay, what we'll do, if he told Bhima, saying, you go and kill the elephant in that division of elephant fighters. His name is, the elephant's name is Ashwatthama. You go and kill him. So Ashwatthama went and smashed the elephant, cracked its skull with his club. And then King Yudhisthira said, okay, Ashwatthama's died, Ashwatthama died. He added under his breath, the elephant, Ashwatthama. Dronacharya, he heard that and thought, oh, my son has died. And he gave up his determination in that state. Actually, one of the Pandava soldiers jumped up on the chariot and actually beheaded him. Because Dronacharya sat down in meditation, ready to give up his life. So that was Krishna's tactic. And that was condemned, actually, by the gurus. They said, this is it's cheating. So, is that only okay for Krishna, or is that okay for us as well? That's your question. We should try and be honorable. Of course, we should always try and do the right thing. As far as possible. It really depends on the circumstance. You know, if you have some... If you're dealing with somebody who doesn't fight by the rules, you might have to adopt an underhand tactic in order to defeat them. But, you know, it wasn't that the Pandavas stabbed Jarasandha in the back. They actually begged a fight and then they fought and destroyed Jarasandha in a fierce fight. So yeah, I think it really depends on the situation. Politics and diplomacy is a complex thing. And you've got to see according to the situation. But yeah, you have to make sure the motivation is correct. We have to always check that within ourselves. Are we seeing ourselves as a servant, or are we simply trying to control and exploit for our own pleasure? If that is the base motivation, founding motivation of any action, then the action is going to be off. In one sense, the only thing we can do, because we're not the doers ultimately, the only thing we can do is perfect our desire. Our conception of ourself, our self-identity, we are the servant of Krishna. And when we have that proper consciousness, all our activities become Krishna conscious automatically. Okay? Any other points? To what level? If you chanted Hare Krishna and then you became inspired. If you chanted Hare Krishna and then became inspired, then...
Yes, because I've come off in the beach.
There you go, that's nice.
So, you know, but to what level? I mean, if we are inspired, to leave the walk or to something,
yeah. To the degree to which our heart is clean, yeah. We can hear the super song. My spiritual master said once, you know, people think, you know, what we should do is follow our intuition, we should follow our heart. But what if our heart is dirty? He said, it's just as intelligent as saying, hey, let's follow the smell of the garbage. You know, because our heart is, you know, all sorts of impure desires are arising there and colouring our vision. So the way to do it is, you have to verify what Krishna is saying from within. Is he saying the same thing in Bhagavad Gita? Often in the beginning we don't have the knowledge to reference, to actually check, you know, I've got some ideas about what I should do. But we don't have necessarily the knowledge to think whether it's guidance from the super soul or just guidance from our own conditioned heart. So oftentimes, it's good to have somebody, oftentimes the spiritual master, all he does is say, okay, what is your idea? And you say, oh, I think I wanted to do this, or I think I'm going to do that. And you say, and he says, yeah, okay, that sounds Krishna conscious. I have to give guidance to some boys sometime. And oftentimes, I'll just say, what do you want to do? What's your idea? And if it's all Krishna conscious, if I can't find any fault in it according to what I understand of Krishna consciousness, then I'll let them do whatever they want to do. Yeah, it depends how Krishna conscious we are. It depends also how, if we've got to become honest to see our own heart. What is our motivation? What is our attachment in that particular situation? But if you don't have that facility, then you should chant in a very prayerful way for guidance. And then, if you chant very nicely, then you will clean the heart and the guidance will become pure. But also we have to study. We have to verify our own ideas with the Shastra and also with our guides. So it's important to find some person that you look up to and you have a good relationship with, that you trust, and just take counsel from them. Doesn't mean they're going to decide your whole life for you, but you see, devotees who learn just take shelter, they don't generally have very big problems. Or if they do have problems, they can easily solve them. It's when we try to act independently and we tie ourselves up in knots and we make a big mess of things, oftentimes. Yeah. So it's good to get that verification in our life, definitely. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Quarter past, Gondra Srinath Bhagavatam.